Welcome to the weekend edition of the Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. On today's program, we got a lot to cover, as always, and looking forward to introducing you to today's guests. But in addition to that, I do want to mention that the Price of Business, which is one of the longest running business shows in the country, continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com. We are adding new content all the time. There you can see all of our regular guests. We have reoccurring guests from Fox Business, from Yahoo Finance, gentlemen like Cody Willard, who was a longtime CNBC and Fox Business anchor. He's on this program every single week. And so we're excited by the talent that we bring you. Also, I do want to mention I've got a book called Making New Rich Books Work for You, and exclusively for our listeners of this program. It's available at a ridiculously low price. If you want to get more information about that, go to priceofbusiness.com. If you read anything by people like Tim Ferriss or Robert Kiyosaki, who's been on my show many, many times, and you know, really were excited but had little to show for it when you try to pursue those things, my book explains why. There's something going on. And the problem really isn't with these authors. It's usually with the reader. And you can get more information about that at priceofbusiness.com. With that, here's our first guest right here on The Price of Business.
I'm Kevin Price. You're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm really excited. We've had Jim Hancock as a regular commentary provider here on The Price of Business show for quite some time. He's incredibly savvy in the technology space, and recently he has began to join us to do actual interviews on a regular basis about his research and work in the technology space. He's a leading authority in this space. His website, by the way, is jlhancock.com. That's jlhancock.com. He's an author. He's an author of primarily novels, in fact, that deal a lot with issues that relate to technology and national security and a lot of these issues. During his time in the military, Jim worked away in the dark corners of the government intelligence communities. He learned two Asian languages and eventually conducted over 100 combat operations with special operations forces in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the Philippines. And so he has a fascinating background. Love having him on the program. Love doing this work with him. And again, you can learn more about him at jlhancock.com.
Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. Always enjoy my chats with J.L. Hancock. He's an author extraordinaire with phenomenal background with the military, with technology, with military intelligence, and he brings this experience to every single interview he does. He's also an author, phenomenal author. I tell you, this author, his books read like nonfiction, even though they are fiction, because they're so steeped with reality in his years of experience. JL, always glad to have you on the program. A little bit about your book before we get started, and the best website for people to get more information.
Yeah, thank you. Great to be here. Name is JL Hancock. My website is pretty easy. It's just jlhancock.com, where you can find out about my books. The Voodoo series is what the books are a part of. They're The Hawk Enigma and The Spear and the Sentinel, where I discuss modern technology and artificial intelligence and a lot of the different ways in which modern technology is being employed in ways that probably people haven't considered.
Yep, very good. People should check that out. And we got a great topic today. I tell you, JL pulls from the headlines, which is really nice. Stories that are being seen, or even better, stories that aren't much talked about, but he's on top of. I think we have a little bit of both in today's topic today. We're going to talk about manned-unmanned teaming concept that's being used in the military, which sounds kind of oxymoronic, which isn't unusual for government, is it?
Yeah, par for the course.
Yeah, set the stage for us on this.
Sure. So one of the big things that's trying to be pushed with the sixth generation fighters, which is everything beyond the F-35 and the F-22, is the ability to have collaborative teaming with unmanned systems. So think of, instead of it being a pilot flying a plane, it is a pilot flying his own having his own wingman, and at the point of building out to the point where you have, instead of the one pilot, you have an entire squadron of aircraft that can be coordinated and run by one individual. However, that particular concept is extremely complex, and there's a lot of things that need to go into understanding what that actually means. And it sounds, and by concept, it may sound like it's relatively easy, but there's a lot of difficulty associated with it, and it's something that I think that a lot of people should know about.
Yeah, I don't know. When I look at my video game history, and I was only controlling one plane, I had my hands full. So
yeah.
So this sounds really complex to me.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I think I think of other old games that I used to play where the little drones that you would get would fly on the side of you, and they were pretty dumb. They either just followed your basic action, or there was nothing really complex that extended your ability when you had these things. And I think that tends to be one way that people think of it. But one of the things that is unique about unmanned teaming is the ability to take these unmanned systems and put them in areas in which you don't want to put a person. And what that means is, in combat in the air in particular, it's all about range. The thing that makes the F-35 and the 22 so dangerous when it comes to stealth isn't always just the fact that they're hard to detect. It's the fact that they can strike their enemy from much farther away. And the ability to integrate these unmanned systems allows, in one respect, for that range to increase, for the sensing to happen at a greater distance, but also for, in some cases, for those sensing elements to also strike on your behalf at a greater distance. And so you're able to reach out in ways that you couldn't before. What the complexity within these spaces is, how do you, one, build in the appropriate sensors on these systems, and then build in an autopilot that allows the systems to make decisions relative to what they're sensing? Now, that sounds weird, but this is a really easy way that I describe this to people is, imagine you're building a robot dog, and you build its legs, and you build its brain, and it can do all the things a dog can do. But when you finish it, you realize the whole reason why you might want to build a robot dog is for the things that make a robot dog a dog, and that's its nose. You forgot to build its nose into the robot because you were too busy focusing on making sure it can walk around. Well, when we build a lot of these robots, we kind of have the same problem. They build them for the ability for it to fly or to walk or to do what it does, and then they just throw a sensor on later. What they're discovering with a lot of these integrations is you have to start with the sensor, and you build around the sensor. So you build the dog around its nose. All of the things in a dog's life happen because of its nose. And so when you have an unmanned system, it's the radar, it's the radio detection at range, it's the camera, it's whatever part of the electromagnetic spectrum that you need to be detecting that is integrated into how the system behaves and why it behaves that way. And this is the complexity of the entire conversation, because that basically allows the pilot to suddenly have all these extra sensors that they don't have just their eyes, nose, and ears. They have 6th, 7th, 8th senses going beyond them that allows them to see the environment in a way they couldn't see it before, and then to act faster, and not just at human speed, but at the speed of the sensor that's detecting it.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, and people, you know, a lot of people might say, what requires this type of, unmanned action? Of course, a lot of people think in sci-fi terms as well, but reality is, it's first of all flight is potentially dangerous. All military flight is potentially more dangerous. And then there's literally, we see them almost as cliches in movies where, this is essentially a suicide mission. And we think that's just the cliche in movies. But the reality is, those have had to happen as well, that, that your probability of survival is actually very low. That was particularly common in World War II with particular missions they went on. So there's a real legitimate need for what we're talking about. The nuance is getting it figured out.
Yeah, and I think that the thing that people don't understand is then the crawl, walk, run element of how you integrate these things. We're not going to default to allowing a system to operate on the edge completely on its own to do everything. It's going to be based around bespoke, isolated requirements and needs that they have rather than an all-encompassing multi-agent system. What I mean by that is there's a movie that came out a few years back where they built this drone that could make all of its own decisions on the edge, and then it decides on its own it wants to go nuke North Korea. Like, there's so many layers to what in order for something to even come close to even having the ability to do something like that it's not even worth considering, because it's not like a large language model, because that's all based on like GPT or whatever. There's elements in there, but what people don't understand is how disconnected and disparate the systems are inside of the military by design. They aren't already connected like we are in our day-to-day world. And so there's so many things that have to be connected. So you start small. You start with saying this thing needs to be able to sense at this one range, and that's all it does. And so you have these little, instead of a Swiss Army knife, you have a scalpel, and everything is a different type of scalpel. And then you integrate all the scalpels into your kit, and then you can be a surgeon, right? But the surgeon isn't the robot. The robot is still the scalpel, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes perfect sense. So what are you going to be watching about this going forward, and what are some final thoughts you want to give to the listener about this?
The big thing to look for in this is you're going to have, from the defense standpoint, the thing that I'm interested in is the front runners are a mixture of primes, which are the traditional larger defense contractors like Raytheon or Lockheed Martin, and then there's these venture capital-backed private companies that are coming up that are pushing in this space, like Anduril and Shield AI, which are really running the unmanned systems capabilities. And to watch is to see how they are down-selected, and then the timelines, and then the cost for these things is they're looking at $1.6 trillion right now for these kinds of programs. And
wow.
I believe it's 1.6. It's way up there. And it's understandable because cost of R&D increases dramatically when you get into these more complex systems. But it's seeing who they down select, especially in light of the new government's approach, the current administration's approach to contracting. They're trying to be significantly more aggressive, a lot less regulation, which is intended to move faster, but it really comes down to who's down selected, how fast they intend to move, and what they actually want it to do are the things to watch out for.
Yeah, very interesting. Give that website one more time for people to get more information. Do want to remind the listener, we'll also have that at priceofbusiness.com. But go ahead and get that one more time.
Yeah, the website is jlhancock, HANCOCK.com. And once again, my name is JL Hancock.
Yeah, and what will they find there? Obviously information about your book, but you've got more than that there. I know because I've explored it. It's a very good website.
Yeah, so I also have blog posts about different parts, things I've written in books, a little tongue-in-cheek, but it also has a lot of technical references to whatever I'm discussing, and also links to other media that I've been a part of, my website with Price of Business, where you can find all the other interviews that I've done, and then a way to contact me, of course.
I encourage people to do that, too. Thanks so much, JL. I am Kevin Price. You're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. Stay tuned for more. After this, welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. Always glad to have on our program Kevin Downs, who is now a regular on the show. He is a leader in the public adjusting space, and so glad to have him on the program. He's really on the front lines of some of the big issues that are going on out there. Kevin, you've been on the show before. Now you're doing a regular series. One of the things I love to do is case studies, and people with case studies, it's a great way. Listeners go, wow, what a great way to like see what's going on in the real world. That happens with case studies. Today, we're not quite doing that, but we're going to introduce people to your firm, some of the topics we'll be talking about in the future, and really giving a panoramic overview of some of your success stories as you're on the front lines, and specifically, if I recall correctly, in California and Florida, which is like two of the most interesting places to be in your field.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've been in the business now 20 years, and we've delivered over $2 billion to our clients. So we'd like to think we've got a good bit of experience helping people.
Yeah, you absolutely do. So a little bit about that, your story, even your background leading you into this, in my opinion, getting into this makes you a unique player in this field. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I was actually a Florida native, born and raised, which is kind of rare. And after I graduated from the University of Florida, I sold insurance for 5 years. So I was an agent selling policies, and a hurricane had hit South Florida. That's what drew me into the business. Tons of our neighbors were struggling to get the money out of the insurance companies. And I found out there's actually a license called a public adjuster where I could be an adjuster for my neighbors and go get them the checks they needed so they could restore their homes without paying out of pocket.
Yes. And that experience of actually selling product, I've mentioned before, I was in the health insurance industry for a number of years. And so even after all these years, and now things have changed too much, but people will say, hey, Kevin, I'm dealing with this with health insurance. And so, and I love that too. And I relish that too. Forget about it now. It's, you know, you have to be on top of it, which I'm sure you are because you remain in that. That is such a huge advantage that, you know, what kind of attorney does a person want? An attorney who has worked in both, as a plaintiff and a defendant, you know, with both. So they know both ways. And that's a great talent and wealth of knowledge you bring to every one of your cases.
Yeah, thank you for that. We definitely consider ourselves students of the game. And what I mean by that is we're constantly keeping up on law changes, policy changes, building code changes. I mean, the four corners of the board is so critical to understand if you plan to try to win the game. And that's exactly what we want to do. We want to help get our clients paid quickly and fairly so they can move on with their lives and not have to pay out of pocket.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, your website is askanadjuster.com, correct?
Yes, sir. That's right. Askanadjuster.com.
Yeah, people need to check this out. And again, I think it's very important to have that unique perspective. So talk about it. I mean, the headlines, you know, first of all, the whole country seems to be consumed by either rain or fire. It's like, wow, it's very biblical, isn't it, Kevin? It's incredible to watch. And this is part of the reasons why I say you're insane if you try to deal with insurance claims without someone like Kevin in your corner, because the cost of protection, as any buyer of insurance knows, has gone up, particularly in the two states you operate in. And meanwhile, they're working as hard as they can, the insurance companies, to be as reluctant and to drag their feet as much as possible in paying their customers. There's huge amounts of evidence of that. In fact, I in one court, the judge said basically the role goes immediately at the point a claim is made from client to adversary. And you may not know you're now an adversary to your insurance companies, but a lot of those companies are looking at it this way. And so this is a really interesting dynamic you're seeing.
Absolutely. You know, the state of Florida did a study quite a few years ago, and what they found is when a property owner has their own public adjuster, they actually average 747% more money on their claim than if they simply just let the insurance company's people tell them what they want to pay them. It's a staggering statistic.
Yeah, and because of ignorance, and that doesn't mean they're stupid. That means they're not informed. They don't do what you do for a living. You know, they love that. They love it. And they play long games. They drag their feet. They do as little as possible for as long as possible because the client doesn't know better. And as soon as someone like you is in the game, and frankly, someone like you with years of experience and someone who sold the product, it's an instant game changer.
Very, very common for us to get involved, and all of a sudden the entire tune changes. Another large check now shows up, and they're willing to actually talk turkey and try to get things resolved, because truth be told, nobody wants to string it out. Nobody wants to have to go through a court system, which costs tons of money. Our job is to get the client paid quickly and fairly, wrap it up, and move on with our lives. One thing I would say, too, which is quite flattering, is, you know, insurance company people, they own homes, too. And not too rarely do we actually get phone calls behind the scenes from people that have a home that need us to help them. Insurance executives calling us saying, hey, I know you guys are the best in the biz. Keep it quiet, but I need your help on my claim.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. They know what happens. They've seen it. Okay, you know, we can go on and on in the introduction, and the introduction is important because now you do have a series with us, which I'm excited about. But we also want to talk about a couple of stories, very short, obviously, of what you've been able to do, one in California and one in Florida. Give us an example, quickly, of each.
Perfect. I was in Santa Monica last week with a single mom who owned a home in the Palisades. She was a total loss. Her home had burned down. She had California Fair. She had been dealing with them on her own, getting very frustrated. She met us. She asked us to take over the project. And in 70 days, we doubled her settlement, and she is absolutely ecstatic. So if you go to our website, you might even see her testimonial video that I shot with her last week at the Santa Monica Pier. But that's just one of many cases where, you know, we step in, all of a sudden real numbers come out, and people can move on with their lives and rebuild.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And what about in Florida?
In Florida, we just last week settled a large condo association claim. So originally they were told, yeah, it's below your deductible. We don't owe you any money. They weren't even going to file. We came along. I was teaching a CE class, and the manager met me and said, hey, come look at this community for me. And we just delivered them $1 million cash last week that they didn't know they had coming. So we love what we do. It's always free for us to come out. And, man, if we can deliver you a large check, we're definitely going to do that, and we're going to win together.
Yeah, and I do want to mention that you don't get paid unless the client gets paid, and that's a really important concept for them to keep in mind. We're going to have to wrap
exactly.
it up. Time goes extremely fast when you're having fun, but I'd like you to get a final thought and the best website for people to get more information. I already gave it once, but give it again.
Yeah, so my final thought is if you own a property and you pay for insurance, we want to connect with you now before you have a claim. We have a wonderful program. We can help set you up quickly and easily in case you ever have damage in the future, and we'll tell you all about it. But our website is www.askanadjuster.com. Ask an Adjuster, 20 years in the business, and we'd love to connect with you well before you actually have a claim. So thank you very much for having me, Kev.
That's Kevin Downs. I'm Kevin Price, and you're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business, and love talking to Joseph Muse. He is one of my favorites, really one of the brightest people I know who takes really, when it comes to business, because he takes a real, truly holistic approach, looking at growth, looking at savings, and does a phenomenal job at helping businesses, regardless of their size. And what's really unique, because there's a gazillion consultants out there that people say that about them, but what's really unique about Joseph is that this company only makes money if you're making money or saving money. I love that. And a lot of companies, this is my slogan. I keep hoping that the Muse of Business, as we call them here in the Price of Business, that Joseph Muse adopts this slogan. For some consultants sell advice, we sell success. And that literally is the difference, because they're not making a penny unless they're successful. Joseph, as you know, I'm kind of a fanboy. I'm almost embarrassed after I introduce you each time to the audience. BusinessGPSLLC.com. In times like this, you're needed more than ever. Our show is getting more questions, and we look at them and go, who would answer this other than you? And today is a great example. But before I get into the question, do you want to let you take a moment just to fill in the gaps? I do a pretty good job because I am a fanboy. I bet I say things about you and your business that you didn't even know.
Kevin, always a pleasure to be on. And when I came out with the concept of it, I thought, oh my gosh, how am I the first one? And I'm sure many will follow, and none have followed. which is amazing to me, because ultimately it's everything is about the success of the business. That's the that's what puts food on the table. That's really all that matters for you, your family, if you're a business owner, your employees, families, etc. And I always draw the comparison or make the comparison. It's like people who sign up for a gym, but then they never go to the gym. Hey, I've done something. I've signed up for a gym. Hey, I have a consultant. He or she is helping me. And we're like the trainers. Come to the gym. And if you don't get fit, don't pay us. But if you do get fit, you're going to be so happy. It's going to change your life. And then we'll get paid. I mean, it's really that simple.
Yeah. And those who have gym memberships and don't use it, just keep in mind what you're doing is paying a fat tax. That's all you're doing. And so if you actually want to get healthy, you got to take action. Your model makes perfect sense, though. I'm with you. And I already figured it out. Why don't others do it? Because people don't have the courage to put their money where their mouth is like you do. Because literally, if you're not getting paid unless you're successful, you are putting money that other consultants get for sure, as long as it's under contract, on the line. You put it on the line. And I don't think most business owners, consultants have that kind of courage. And so props to you. And here's a question we got, and I'm eager to talk to you about it. How do you assess and prioritize which financial stress points to tackle first when a business comes to you?
Gosh, that's a great question. So, you know, the first step there is trying to quickly assess the situation over the phone with somebody that you've never talked with before, and they're not comfortable. They know they need help. That's why they reached out to us, but they're not comfortable sharing their stress points out of the gate, but we have to quickly get to it. So the first thing is to assess it, and you ask simple questions, you know, things like, what are you behind on? What bills have you not paid? Who's not paying you? Just really simple things that they can answer without looking at financial statements. And then once you can assess that, you can figure out the level of pain that they're in and where to start to address it. So maybe a better analogy there is like being a doctor, right? So I need to figure out.
Triage. It's kind of like triage.
Right, exactly. And you're trying to figure out where's the bleeding. Where's the most bleeding, and to what extent is it bleeding? Is that a small cut or is that a large gash, right? And so you're kind of doing a quick scan all over the body, and then you're figuring out, okay, what's the biggest pain point? The biggest pain point is, I don't know that I have money for this payroll on Friday. Okay, let's figure out right now how to address that so you can make your payroll on Friday, or I owe the bank money and I'm behind, or, you know, whatever it is, let's find that part on the body that is in the greatest pain or in the greatest danger, and let's immediately start to address it. And normally with a few basic questions and a 30 or 45 minute phone call, we can figure out what it is and start to lay the foundation or the steps to solve it.
Yeah, I like that. And I'm curious, you know, so like there's advisors out there. I'll use Dave Ramsey, right, who helps people with personal finance. This is not an endorsement of him. He and I are friends. He's been on my show several times over the years, but I do have areas of difference. But one of the things he does is, you know, he assesses where people are financially and says, you know, don't pay off the biggest debt, even if the rewards are big. You got yourself into this because of attitudes around spending and debt. Let's start with the quickest to pay off. Build momentum. Encourage morale. I mean, how do you think about these type of things if debt is the issue, for example? How do you approach these?
You know, that's a good question. So I think businesses in many ways are more unique or more diverse than people in their financial situation. So you could have a restaurant or a small business operator, and he's in the hole $30,000-$50,000 with a lender, and that's very different than a manufacturing company with 75 different vendors they're behind on, equipment leases. I mean, it's very different, but so I'd like to take the time and go through the phone call and come up with a custom prescription. Yeah, keeping with the doctor analogy, come up with something custom for them. The other thing is, not only, it's almost like two people, Kevin. You've got the business owner and their mentality, their thinking, and their fear. And then you have the business. So you've got to assess both in that call to figure out, okay, this is how I can solve the business problem, and this is who I'm dealing with, and how does that impact my ability to help him or her solve the problem. But then to come back to your point, I'm a huge believer in an early victory. I'm a huge believer in building momentum because it rebuilds confidence, because a lot of times the business owner's been knocked down, kicked, punched, you know, and is doubting themselves. And then two, they also then think of me and Business GPS as, wow, I trust them more. Right? They know what they're doing. Look at what I did in only 48 hours. Okay, what's next? I'm ready to go. It's like your first day at the gym or your first week at the gym where you're lifting more weight. You go, wow, great. I can't wait to do more. So anyways, it's a combination of all those things.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, you got to build morale and momentum, and there's a faith operation going on between the two of you. So it's absolutely crucial. So you're big on both spending and on revenue generating. Talk about how you, again, I understand it's very customizable. I guess if the problem is more glaring in the spending part, that's where you want to go ASAP. But talk a little bit about, you know, how you size it up.
That's an excellent point. And I tell people we can't cut our way to success. It will help stop the bleeding. I could go into the health body analogy, but it will stop the bleeding, and it can be a quick success. Hey, I'll call the bank. We're going to buy you time, et cetera, right? Easy fix on the expense side. But you do need to rebuild the muscle. You do need to rebuild revenue in order to have growth, and every business is different that way. So we do spend time on the phone with our clients, coming up with strategies to build revenue, which tend to play out over 30, 60, 90 days, while in the meantime, we're immediately doing the triage to stop the bleed, increase cash flow, not by revenue generation immediately, but by reduction of debt and restructuring and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but obviously you better look at the bigger issues, because you might conclude you have a nonprofit organization without tax-exempt status rather than an actual business.
Right, that's exactly right.
You know,
exactly,
yeah, this is right. A great idea. This business was awesome 20 years ago, but Blockbuster, but you probably should have moved on before now. So there's a lot of factors that are unique. And talk real quickly as we wrap it up. What are the time frames of initial engagement to immediate action, whatever that action is?
Yeah, and you know, just real quickly, it is amazing talking about it now. It is amazing how much ground must be covered out of the gate to really understand the business, to understand the person, to understand the situation that they're in, and how we accomplish that in 45 minutes to get started is actually somewhat shocking. So from the time we have a phone call, today is, let's say the day is a Thursday or a Friday, typically within 24 hours, 48 hours, we're engaged. It's immediate, because I try to stress to most of the people I talk to, the sooner we tackle this, the better. Let's not put our head in the sand. So it's typically within 1 to 2 days, we're engaged. They're sending over, I end the call with a checklist. Hey, if you want to proceed, we're interested in proceeding with you and rebuilding your business. Here are the 3, 4, 5 things that we need. I send them an email. Please get it to me immediately. And then we have a follow-up call, I don't know, 3 to 5 days after, and we're in it 3 to 5 days after, meaning we already know what we need to triage. We're already on the phone doing that work. So that by the time we get to the end of the first week, that business owner should really feel and see progress with their business. So it's immediate. And that gets back to what we said in the beginning. It's our business model. It's our business. That's how we view it. Your business is our business. We're not an equity owner. We're not a shareholder, but we treat it like it's ours, because that's what's going to ultimately pay us. So the quicker and faster and better we can heal it, the better for you, the better for us.
Yeah, you have all the, you know, for your clients, they have all the benefits in you of a business partner without any of the hassles.
And
that's exactly what you want. Someone who shows up fully as if they own it, because they are not making, you're not making anything unless you show up fully. I got to love that. BusinessGPSLLC.com. Make sure you check them out. Joseph Muse, the Muse of Business, as we call him here on The Price of Business. You can find out more about him as well at priceofbusiness.com. Stay tuned for more after this.
Hello, I'm Dr. John, the host of Staying Healthy with Dr. John Pudrill on the nationally syndicated Price of Business radio network. In this episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Michael Jacobson, co-founder of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, author of Salt Wars, and co-founder of the National Food Museum. Dr. Jacobson has spent decades as one of the leading voices in nutrition advocacy, taking on the food industry over misleading marketing and dangerous levels of additives that have crept into our everyday diet. In this second conversation together, we dive into one of the most pressing issues in modern health, the rise of ultra-processed foods, what they are, why they present unique risks, and what each of us can do to protect our health. Dr. Jacobson, you have spent decades studying the food industry. How do you define ultra-processed foods, and what makes them more concerning than simply junk food?
Well, there's certainly an overlap between ultra-processed foods and junk foods. But there's a key difference, which is that we called foods junk foods based on their nutritional value or lack of nutritional value, the fat, the sugar, the salt content of foods. Ultra-processed foods look at foods in a different way. They look at ultra-processed foods are made from basic ingredients like white flour, sugar, salt, water, and but also ultra-processed foods are concerned about a range of artificial food additives. And even though the additives have been tested on animals and found to be safe, the thinking about ultra-processed foods is that mixed together, along with the foods made from the separated ingredients, not whole foods, but sugar and fat and so on, that leads to illnesses, starting with weight gain, but going on to heart disease. And there's, you know, some foods are obviously ultra-processed, the kinds of sugary breakfast cereals aimed at kids, fruit snacks aimed at kids. You know, those are just flour and water and oil, artificial colorings and flavorings that are then put through extruders and other kinds of machinery to create what the companies call food. It's just junk. But there's a gray area where, what if you have yogurt, say, which is basically a healthy food, let's say fat-free yogurt, and you add flavorings to it? Does that make it an ultra-processed food? That's kind of the gray area. Or what if a bread, a whole grain bread, had some kind of emulsifier in it? Does that minor ingredient render the food ultra-processed and worthy of being kicked out of the food supply? So scientists and government officials are going to be struggling with this definition of ultra-processed food.
Wonderful. You mentioned yogurt and bread. Are there any other grocery items, common items, that can surprise people by falling into this category?
Well, I could think of others like meat. that has been steaks that have been injected with broth, a salty broth that contains different kinds of additives.
Okay.
The food is basically meat, but is it ultra processed? It's a steak.
Right.
So, but it's not worth worrying too much about that gray area when so many other foods, soft drinks, cookies, and candy, are obviously ultra processed junk foods.
Yeah.
In Dr. Jackson, in Salt Wars, you explored the impact of excess sodium. Beyond salt, what other components of ultra-processed foods like added sugars, refined flours, and or industrial fats you believe pose the greatest health risks?
Well, sugars and saturated fat and white flour instead of whole wheat flour. So those are the obvious ones.
Okay.
And so that's soft drinks, 90% water, but 10% sugar, and the major source of sugar in the food supply, or high fructose corn syrup. So when one shops, yes, we should look for real food. And, you know, and it's fortunate that most supermarkets are laid out in a way that encourages people to buy fruits and vegetables. They're so often the first things you see in a grocery store. And boy, we'd be screaming if the first things you saw were cookies, candies, pastries. So we have that one bit of good luck.
Dr. Jacobson, thank you for sharing your insight and experience. Ultra-processed foods are a huge part of our diet. But the conversations like this will help us see the path to healthier choices. For listeners who want to learn more, I encourage you to check out Salt Wars and visit the National Food Museum online. Thank you, Dr. Jacobson.
Thank you very much, Dr. John. I appreciate your having me again.
Thank you.
Are you leading with clarity or simply reacting? Hi, I'm Daphne Michaels, human potential expert and ultra consciousness leadership guide. Welcome to my series, The Next Level, on the Price of Business Digital Network. In the fast-paced world of leadership and business, it's easy to fall into the trap of reacting to challenges rather than proactively shaping your path. And just trying not to react is nearly impossible without understanding a very important concept. I want to introduce you to the transformative mechanism in the human psyche, our witness. Our witness is a higher level aspect of our psyche, an impartial observer that operates in a broader bandwidth of awareness. It doesn't judge, it doesn't rush, it simply observes. By developing your witness, you gain the ability to step back and see the full landscape of your leadership and decisions. You'll recognize how you're showing up in your role and how others are responding to you. This clarity is essential for avoiding confusion and staying grounded in the complexities of business and leadership. Every leader needs to develop their witness. It's the key to navigating challenges with insight and composure. If you're ready to elevate your leadership and decision-making, I invite you to visit my website at daphnemichaels.com and begin developing this powerful part of your psyche today.
The article with the headline, How to Create Engagement with an Energetic-Led Organization. Welcome to the 32nd article in the series Be the Leader You Aspire here on the Price of Business show, where we'll focus on the trends which lie ahead of us and how they will affect humans and businesses. The articles are based on my book Energetic Leadership, which talks about 9 trends leaders must navigate to cater for employees' increasing demand for more spiritual leadership and sustainable business models aligned with their life purposes. These articles are about business leadership in the new era. I hope you'll find inspiration for your own leadership and the leader you aspire to be. The last articles have outlined 9 trends for business leadership and focused on authentic curiosity as a key competency for leaders to master. They have explained the concept of energy frequencies as the source of our true potential followed by the alignment of the company's purpose with the life purposes of employees and customers. They have covered the 6 to 5 different generations currently working, focused on self-care and the ability to be present, and what uncertainty is about and how to navigate in it. They have talked about the importance of intuition in decision-making and what a healthy economy and society are, and how we all can improve democracy. The articles have looked at customer journeys built on healthy energy and how intuition and resilience can improve productivity. They have been about the world as a mirror of how we are doing as multidimensional humans, what we do with true AI, how change management must change, both in terms of timelines and content, and the urgent need for a new leadership playbook linked to simple strategies which are about people first and foremost, based on curiosity, consciousness, and freedom, and how we get there. In this article, I look at how to create an energetic-led organization. In today's fast-changing business environment, engagement is the currency of success. An energetic-led organization doesn't just focus on KPIs or quarterly results. It consciously manages the energy, intuition, and emotional connection that fuel performance. This approach draws on the principle of energetic leadership, where leaders intentionally align their own energy and guide their teams to operate from a place of clarity, vitality, and shared purpose. Energetic leadership is on the rise because when modern life design collides with old leadership habits, it is time to change and tap into intuition and unleash our energetic sense of the future. Energy consciousness is about being aware of how attitudes, emotions, mindset influence outcomes. When leaders manage their own presence, balancing confidence with empathy, they create an atmosphere where people feel seen, valued, and motivated. Intuition in this context becomes a leadership superpower. The ability to sense underlying dynamics, anticipate challenges, and make decisions that feel right, not just logically, but also energetically. The challenges. Even with the benefits, leading with energy consciousness has its hurdles. Energy drains, stress, overwork, misalignment prioritizes can lower both leader and team energy. Cultural resistance. Some organizations are used to transactional task-based leadership and may initially resist a more holistic approach. Underdeveloped intuition. Leaders may not trust their instinct or know how to integrate intuition into decision-making. 3 practical actions for leaders. Number 1. Lead with aligned presence. Before important meetings or decision, take a moment to ground yourself, center your breathing, set your intention, and decide what energy you want to bring into the interaction. This conscious preparation creates stability and focus, which teams naturally mirror. Number 2, design energy-conscious workflows. Look for ways to balance intensity with recovery. Build rhythms into the work week that allow for deep focus, collaboration, and rest. High engagement isn't about constant activity. It's about maintaining sustainable energy so creativity and problem-solving stay sharp. Number 3. Encourage intuitive dialogue. Create safe spaces where team members can share not only data-driven insight but also gut feeling or emerging concerns. When people feel that they feel their intuitive input is valued, they bring more of themselves to work and strengthen trust within the team. The advantages: high retention. People are more committed when they feel energized and connected. Faster adaptability. Teams aligned on an energetic level respond quickly to change. Deeper innovation. An open and intuitive culture sparks fresh ideas. And ultimately, the spark. An energetic-led organization doesn't get things done. It does so with vitality, creativity, and purpose. By leading with energy, consciousness, and intuition, you create an environment where engagement is natural, sustainable, and deeply rewarding. I have named it Energetic Leadership.
Hello, I'm Dr. John, the host of Staying Healthy with Dr. John Pudhalil on the nationally syndicated Price of Business Radio Network. In this episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Michael Jacobson, co-founder of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, author of Salt Wars, and co-founder of the National Food Museum. Dr. Jacobson has spent decades as one of the leading voices in nutrition advocacy, taking on the food industry over misleading marketing and dangerous levels of additives that have crept into our everyday diet. In this second conversation together, we dive into one of the most pressing issues in modern health, the rise of ultra-processed foods. What they are, why they present unique risks, and what each of us can do to protect our health. You have often challenged food manufacturers over misleading marketing. How do you see industry shaping public perception of ultra-processed foods today?
Well, it's really too early to know, but I think one of the things that's shaping up is that companies, the food industry, will emphasize that gray area of a basically healthy food that has some probably innocuous additives. And they'll say, look, we can't define ultra-processed because some foods that are would be labeled ultra-processed are basically really healthy. And we shouldn't regulate ultra-processed foods until we have a good, clear, ironclad definition. And they will try to stop any definition like that.
Is there any similarities between this and what the tobacco industry did to continue people wanting to smoke?
Well, the food industry has used tobacco-like tactics for decades of making there's never enough evidence to say something is harmful, a food is harmful, whether it's tooth decay or heart disease, whether it's soda pop or hot dogs. There's never enough evidence. So I think the food industry will continue to do that. And it'll be interesting to see what the federal government does and what state governments are doing. So the state of California is trying to ban ultra-processed foods from schools, and legislators want to come up with a definition to make sure that the worst of the ultra-processed foods are kept out. And so it could be that we'll see more action at the state level than the federal level.
For people who want to genuinely reduce ultra-processed foods but feel overwhelmed by convenience, cost, culture, what practical first steps would you recommend?
Read the label.
Okay.
And read the label carefully. You'll look at the nutrition, how much sodium is there, how much saturated fat, how many calories, and look at the ingredients. And some foods have 20 or 30 ingredients, many of them innocuous, like the ingredients added to white flour to improve its nutritional value, to partially restore its nutritional value. But when you see artificial colorings, probably a junk food.
What is your opinion regarding home cooking? Is that a realistic solution for most families today?
Well, we could certainly do a lot more home cooking than we are, but the convenience of buying packaged foods, buying fast foods, going out to eat at a table service restaurant, and Americans' wealth, that we have the money to buy those convenience foods. People can make time to cook. It's fun. You can get kids involved. You can cook large batches and freeze them. And the food usually tastes better. And oftentimes it's healthier, but not always. Because you could be sitting at home making fudge brownies and dying of heart disease. So home cooking is no 100% solution, but it's a way that you could control what it is you're eating and have interesting meals.
With your work on the National Food Museum, how can education and cultural storytelling help shift the public towards a healthier, less processed eating habit?
Well, education is certainly vitally important. It should be included in every child's grammar school and high school education. It should also be included in medical school education. But education isn't a cure-all. You know, we have forces in our society that are pushing us towards ultra-processed junk foods. And I think for education to work, it has to be very high profile and persistent. Some of the campaigns, you know, there are education campaigns all the time that are totally without impact. And I think the federal government is planning on undertaking worthless education campaigns regarding food and the environment. But if there's a pointed, hard-hitting campaign like there was on trans fat, and I'm sure you remember, you know, when you get all the cable news shows talking about it, late night comedians lampooning foods with trans fat, newspaper editorials, dietitians everywhere, then you can have a real impact.
How can we find a balance between the food industry that exploits every opportunity to make a profit and the public that really wants to eat healthier, less processed foods? How do you balance it?
Well, you have to use advocacy to try to get government involved or private litigation to put some constraints on the food industry. They will be powerful no matter what. They can spend literally billions on advertising, millions on lobbying, on campaign contributions, and it's hard to fight that. Right. But when you have the scientific facts and you have brave legislators and government officials, then you can make some impact. It's nice to see RFK Jr. trying to get food dyes out of the food supply. Of course, he's not banning them. That's his power. The FDA could institute bans. They're not doing that. It's education. Yeah. And he's miseducating people on so many other issues, starting with vaccines, but also the new dietary guidelines, he said, will be promoting meat and dairy products.
Right.
And that's crazy. In his opposition to fluoridated water, his advocacy of raw milk, it's not going to make America healthy again. So I think he's squandering his ability to have a major impact on the public's health, partly through education, partly through regulation, partly for criticizing industries that are undermining the public's health.
Dr. Jacobson, thank you for sharing your insight and experience. Ultra-processed foods are a huge part of our diet, but the conversations like this will help us see the path to healthier choices. For listeners who want to learn more, I encourage you to check out Salt Wars and visit the National Food Museum online. Thank you, Dr. Jacobson.
Thank you very much, Dr. John. I appreciate your having me again.
That wraps up another Price of Business. I am glad to be with you. Really enjoyed it and enjoying our new home here on these stations around the country. I do want to remind you that the show continues 24/7. Not only do we have this weekly show that you can hear on this station, but we're on other stations around the country with a daily program as well. You can easily learn about them by visiting us at priceofbusiness.com. We affectionately say it is the show that never ends, and what we mean by that is that it continues 24/7 with the addition of new audio, video, articles, and more at priceofbusiness.com. While there, we'd like you to engage with us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and, like us on Facebook.
follow us on Twitter at Kevin Price Live and all of our sister sites as well. All right, I'm going to take a break until next time. Next week we'll be back with you with much more information for you, and look forward to that conversation. And I want to say again thank you to USA Business Radio to make it possible for this to have been commercial-free, an entire hour of commercial-free. And guess what? Even more commercial-free than public radio. So we're excited about that. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on this station.